Welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby, a fortnightly podcast where I software testing. Have you got a minute to answer a couple of questions for me? And on today's episode, I have Rosie Hamilton with me. Hello, Rosie.
Hi, Jem. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being on the show. How are you today?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Had a sort of slightly stressy day at work, but I'm okay now. when don't we have stressy days at work?
Exactly. Sometimes it feels like it comes with the job description, but you know, it's all fine. Cool. So today, what I wanted to talk about was the survey that you did earlier this year, because I think that was the first time I saw you retweeted onto my Twitter feed, and I was interested in the survey, and then the results came out, and I was really interested in that as well. It just seemed like it's something that I'd seen, like, surveys from, like, companies and things like that, but not just like someone going, right, I'm interested in what's going on
yeah.
in the world of software, and I'm just gonna do it all by myself, and I'm just gonna do it like as, do you know what I mean? And I was really interested in that, I guess, and the fact that you just kind of, well, I'm not saying you just decided, but you decided to do that. So
yeah,
I don't know how it started.
It kind of happened, I don't want to say accidentally, because there was a planning element involved, but I'd been involved in a number of conversations sort of like with co-workers and sort of people within the community, and the same questions basically kept coming up. So I was talking to testers around sort of like how we got into testing, and pretty much everyone I spoke to kind of was all sort of saying, oh, well, I didn't plan to be a tester. It was something I just fell into accidentally. And it was the same for me. I mean, I feel like testing was sort of accidentally happened for me. And I'd written sort of a draft blog post around sort of like, I'd ask a few friends sort of like, how did you get into testing? And there was also these other questions about why is it really hard to hire testers? Sort of like, where do testers come from? How do we find them? And why did nobody actually want to be a tester?
Yeah.
So I wrote this draft blog post, and then I suddenly realized as I was reading it back that it was all pretty much my own personal opinions and the opinions of a small group of my friends. And I was like, well, this, I didn't feel confident publishing it and sort of talking about it, because I didn't really have any evidence to sort of back up all these ideas and claims. And that in turn led to a sort of list of, I guess, like almost like a list of theories that I had about testing. So then I decided I was going to do this survey project, and basically I've designed the questions around the sort of theories that I had. Sort of like, I wanted to know if testers had all studied computing, or if they were all graduates, or if people had actually known they wanted to do testing while they're in education. So that's how it came about. Just wanted to get some answers.
Yeah, that subject around where testers come from is something that I've been considering myself. I've got my own survey that I was meant to have closed yesterday, and I haven't yet, about the same thing of just like testers just seem to all fall into it, and they never seem to actually, very few people plan to go into testing. And so it's something that another thing that intrigues me, just because it's just, where do we come from?
We've all sort of got different backgrounds, and I think there was a small group within the sample, I think it was probably about 11% in total, which had actually known they wanted to be testers while they were studying. So it's difficult, and I think sort of historically, testing is not being as aspirational as development. So people would, if they were sort of technically skilled and could program, they would be more likely to pursue a development career. Maybe because they didn't even know testing was an option, and testing's always kind of, for me, it's always sort of, I mean, my background is games testing. So the sort of games testing jobs that I've had in the past have always been very, they're not automated testing. It's sort of black box manual testing. And they've always been viewed as sort of unskilled work, even though it's exploratory testing, and you still have to devise theories, apply those to the software, and you know, work out why the crash is happening, or sort of like reproduce the steps and sort of explore a computer game is a very open-ended system with almost like an infinite number of paths through it. It's still, well, when I worked in the industry, which was probably about 10 years ago, it was still seen as unskilled work.
Yeah, I think that is that's another reason people don't realise testing's a thing, because there's that thing of, oh, anyone can do testing, you just click around, just do some clicking around and break stuff. It's not seen as aspirational because people don't realise that there are aspirations there to do something bigger and greater.
Yeah, I really think that's the case. But I do think attitudes are changing. When I got the sort of results back, I think one of the other things that sort of the survey found that I thought was quite interesting was that, first of all, not all testers were sort of like had degrees. So we had like a variety of sort of education levels, and some people didn't actually. They said they had no formal education. But the other one was that we have people early in their careers now. I think it was sort of 1 in 3 hasn't actually studied computing. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting, the fact that testing is, you can still test without having a degree in computer science, for example.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's 4 people in the test team where I work, and one of them studied networks, IT networks. And then we've got someone who did a humanities degree, I did a biochemistry degree, and there's a physics degree, someone with a physics degree as well. Like, one of us has done, that's it. There's nothing fully, like software engineer or anything like that in it.
Yeah, I think testing is all about sort of critical thinking and problem solving. And if you've got sort of critical thinking, problem solving mindset, the rest of the stuff can just kind of be learnt on the job, or, you know, as you go along. I don't think it's very, very difficult. It's very, very different to development. Put it that way.
Everyone says developers are problem solvers, but it's still, and they are, but I think we're solving different problems.
Yes.
I think that's where the skill set is, and that's probably one of the reasons why it's harder to, well, like, people say it's hard to hire good testers, because it is that thing of, you've got to test a very sort of specific skill set almost, but there's no like easy form. Like, you can't just throw a coding like exercise at them, which some people do hire. That's how they hire developers, even if they're quite lazy.
Yes, I think it's harder to measure testers than it is to measure developers. I guess with development, you generate a portfolio of, I don't know, a GitHub repository and examples of things that you've made. For testing, it's probably harder to generate sort of evidence of stuff that you've tested.
Yeah.
I think sort of more sort of testing evidence comes through, like, employers will probably be looking for people which, you know, are active in the community with like Twitter or blog posts or podcasts or that kind of sort of evidence of testing. But even then, when you're interviewing testers, it's very, very difficult at that interview stage to know even how someone will perform when you sit them in front of the thing that you want to test.
Cool. So I'm going to bring it back to the survey bit.
Yeah, of course.
So you said you had quite a long planning session for it. So it came out of this blog post, but then you sat down and planned it out. And I'm saying that was planning out the questions and the format of the questions.
Yeah. I wanted to try and get the most sort of bang for my buck with sort of useful questions which could be interpreted in different ways, but without sort of necessarily bombarding people saying, please answer these 200 questions. And I did that by, there was a set of 12 positive questions and 12 negative questions, and I used those to make almost like a measurement of happiness, so how happy a tester is. Mm-hmm. So if they answered true to sort of 12 positive questions and false to all the negative questions, then they'd get like the maximum score. And one of the things that I found with that is that the places that we work and sort of like the environments where we're testing, there is a big range, a massive difference between sort of like the best places and the worst places. There are some pretty grotty testing jobs out there.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the same for development. I think it's probably the same for most things. The sort of planning that I did for the survey, I was always thinking about the questions that I wanted to answer and how I was going to reach those answers, which is why I asked the questions that I did. But yeah, there's still some things I would have done different. Hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you briefly about the analysis that you did. The blog post that came out of all this was quite hefty.
Did you wait until you had the results all started, the results started coming in before you decided how you were going to analyse them, or did you have a kind of idea in your head? Because obviously you had the idea of some of the answers that you wanted, or you wanted the answers that you wanted to see, but did you plan out the analysis as well before, or did, or was that kind of ad hoc-ish?
Kind of. So what happened was, like, the survey started running, and it was on a Google form, and the output for sort of Google forms, they'd sort of like give you like a CSV file. And I very quickly realized that Excel was going to be a bit of a monster for like trying to, I didn't want to use Excel. It was going to be too time consuming, and it was just a bit of a pain. So I started looking at a programming language called R, which is it's like a sort of statistical analysis IDE, R Studio, and it has like a graphical packages in there as well. So it lets you sort of manipulate data and do maths and sums and draw plots and graphs and all kinds of sort of statistics. So I got hold of a basic sort of O'Reilly R book and sort of started working through that and kind of spent my lunch times at work banging my head off the desk for a few weeks because the learning curve was pretty steep. But I sort of persevered with that, and what I was able to do while the survey was going on was I was sort of saving off the CSV file.
Okay.
And I was kind of importing that sort of half finished CSV file and sort of playing with it basically in R, sort of like trying to, well, I think the first thing I did was make this happiness index to for all the positive and negative questions. So I wanted to sort of see what was going on there. And then every few days, as more people had sort of answered the survey, I just download the latest CSV file. And one of the amazing things with R is that I didn't actually have to change any of my code. Like, if I'd done this in Excel, I probably would have had to like mess around with all the columns and stuff like that and change all the formulas to update. But with R, it feeds in a CSV file, and then your code basically, it's all sort of on vectors. So you can analyze like a row, a column of sort of answers. Mm-hmm. And all that happened was every time I fed in the new CSV file, like the plots got better because there was like more sort of data coming in. So at the start, there would be like a small sample of only like 10 people on the bar plot, and then more data would come in, and then it would sort of go up to about 30 people, and you know, sort of start getting excited. And like when we got past the 100 testers had replied, I was like, oh, this is really cool. So yeah, it was like the analysis was sort of ongoing, and the way I sort of did it was a lot of time was actually spent just exploring the data and looking for things that were interesting sort of in it. There was a number of sort of dead ends and a few sort of questions that I asked where they didn't really have any, there was nothing remarkable or surprising about them. I think there was one question I asked, and it's like, do you think other testing jobs are better than your job? And the split was like 50-50. It's like half people think the grass is greener. And I was like, well, that doesn't really say anything about testing. So explored, and once I'd actually sort of found some things which were interesting, and there was an interesting correlation between how happy somebody was and how likely they were to find another testing job, so that, I think that was some box plots on one of the blog posts. But yeah, and then once I did sort of all the plots first, and then I wrote the blog posts around the plots to try and sort of make sense of everything, and I tried to sort of explain a little bit about the stats that I'd learned as well. I think the whole process took about 3 months. It was quite in depth.
Yeah, yeah. So you learn R just for the analysis?
Yeah, yeah. I'd been dabbling with various other programming languages before. The job I had before my current one, I did some automation with Python and wrote a few scripts there. I'd also been using Golang. And sort of exploring sort of making web apps and solving problems on Project Euler with Golang. But so I wasn't a complete novice to programming and defining variables and all that kind of thing, but I found was very different to any of the languages that I'd used before.
I suppose it's quite a specific use, isn't it? It's mostly for statistics and stuff.
But it doesn't have like loops. Well, it's all done on vectors, so you don't really have to use like a loop, whereas most sort of other programming languages you would loop over things.
Cool. So yeah, because you said you reached over the 100 mark. How many people roughly took part in the end? It was quite a big survey.
It was 100, I think it was 187 responses in total. There was one person that responded and said that they didn't work as a software tester and they'd never worked as a software tester. So I had to sort of clean the data and remove their response from there. There was 180, I think it was 181 that currently worked in software testing, and there was, I think it was five which previously worked in software testing. The raw data's up on GitHub. Oh yeah, that's one of the things that I realized sort of like after, when I was asking people to fill it out, because I made the whole thing like really transparent, and I said like, hey, the raw data is going to be available on GitHub for like the public and anyone can look at it. People were actually really keen to fill it out because they wanted the same, I guess they wanted to find the answers, the answers to all the questions. So
I'll get a link to the blog posts and GitHub and everything and put it in the show notes here as well. So if people haven't already seen it, they can see it all. And have a play with the data themselves if they want as well. I think I'm pretty sure I've linked to your blog post before anyway, but I'll do it again just so people can see what we're talking about. Because it was, as I said, I saw it quite a lot. I was impressed at how we'd gone for it as a community. We're like, no, this is amazing. The survey, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And it was really, I was feeling out going, yeah, these are all good questions. Some of them I hadn't really even thought about properly. Like I'd thought about them vaguely, but not actually sat down and articulated a lot of the thoughts about like current work and getting into testing and what I'd had. I'd not actually thought about all these together for myself really, like in my personal position. Mm-hmm. So I think it was quite, just filling it out was quite interesting, to be fair.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful to everybody that filled it out and everybody that took part. You know, it's one thing to sort of try and run like a survey or to collect some data to do analysis on, but it's the people that actually take the time to fill it out, which makes this sort of stuff possible.
Okay, so away from the actual results of the survey, what do you say was one of the biggest or the lesson that comes immediately to mind from doing the survey, planning out or carrying out all that kind of stuff, the actual survey itself as opposed to the results of the survey?
Right. The actual act of surveying a large group of people, planning. You get like one shot, like you put all this planning and effort in, and if it's not quite right, you just get one shot and then the data comes back in, and that's the data that you get. You can't say, oh, sorry guys, I just need to change something, can you fill it in again? So the planning is very, very important. And I'd say the more time you spend preparing and planning, the better the results you'll get at the end. I also found that I thought it was important as well. Like one of the things I did was I made a lot of the questions mandatory. I don't think you were able to skip any. Mm-hmm. And if I'd given people the option to sort of skip out some questions as well, that would have left some holes in the data.
Yeah,
and it would have the result, I don't think the analysis would have been as good. So I'd say if you're going to make a survey, make sure that it's mandatory to answer sort of all the questions. Obviously, you know, try not to ask anything sort of too offensive. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Oh yeah, and having open-ended answers is one thing that kind of it was a bit of a bump in the road. I think I said on the industry question, sort of like, which industries have you worked in? And there was a sort of long list of check ticky boxes. And there was another category for other, which was like an open-ended text box where people could type in whichever industry they'd worked in. And it took so much effort to clean up that open-ended text box because people were just typing loads of things in, or they were sort of like typing like three or four variations of the same industry in there. So again, advice for anyone sort of running a survey, the more closed the questions are, sort of like true, false, yes, no, one, which options, or even like scales, like how would you rate this from 1 to 5? The more closed the questions, the better.
Yeah, there's less manual work and having to try and figure out what someone actually meant, or if they meant the same as this other person.
It's it's easier to sort of examine the results at the end when everything's sort of quite closed. The more data. More data you get, the better. So try not to, I'd say probably leave it open as long as you possibly can. Try to get as many people as you can to respond to it. The larger the sample, the more sort of, the more sort of accurate the findings will be. If you only ask 10 people, then they might all have the same opinion. Whereas if you ask like 10,000 people, you're going to get a more sort of diverse response.
So if you were to do, I mean, you kind of cover this with lessons you've learned, but is there anything that you would definitely do differently next time? Is there something where you've looked at the data and gone, oh, if I'd have just asked this question, I would have got a bit more, I could have done this analysis and it would have told me slightly more, or...
As far as the questions go, I think sort of more demographic questions would have been good. Sort of this would be things like country of residence, or I guess even sort of like age groups, I'm guessing, sort of like to try and split the sample by, you know, people which have just come straight out of just sort of around sort of school leaving age to people which are like later on in their careers. So yeah, more demographic questions would have been interesting to divide the data up. But there was one thing that I was very, very mindful of, and that was I didn't want to split the sample by gender. I thought that it was irrelevant whether, you know, you're male or female if you're testing software. I didn't think that was an appropriate question to ask.
I can see that gender's always a fuzzy question to ask as well.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it about that. I wanted to make it about software testers in the workplace.
So what were your personal takeaways from the survey results about testers, about the world of testing and testers?
We are a very, very diverse group of people. We've all got our own stories. There was one tester that I spoke to on Slack chat while the survey was going on, and she said that she'd had difficulty with one of the multi-choice questions. I think it was what made you apply for your first testing job. And the reason that she said she struggled with that was because one day she came into work and apparently a boss told her, your old job doesn't exist anymore. You're a tester now.
Oh my god!
So, and that wasn't like, I don't know, press ganged into being a tester wasn't one of the options on the what made you apply for your first testing job. So, but I tried with that question to sort of try and keep it sort of closed-ended answers. But I think there's a whole load of reasons that people sort of apply for their first testing job. And like I think sort of like the highest sort of motivating factors were like I think unemployment was pretty high. And also, I mean, people said that I think the highest answer was people thought it would seem interesting, you know, and testing as a field, it's a very sort of deep field. There's like so many different aspects. When you think about testing, it's not just functional testing. There's performance testing, security testing, you know, the rabbit hole goes really deep, and you can explore as much or as little as you want. So yeah, I wasn't surprised that people said that they thought it would be interesting.
No, because even if you don't really know, like, you can kind of see from the outside that there's different things you could do, and then you get a little bit in and you realize just how deep it goes, and you're like, oh, okay, I could choose to test basically whatever I want. I could find something to do here. And you realize that there's so much you could do that you didn't even realize before.
So other things that sort of stood out, I mean, I was a little bit surprised when there was one question on there, which was like, are you happy in your testing job? And like, I think it was 75% said yes and 25% said no. And I was a bit, what's the word, a bit surprised that, like, for every four testers, there's one that's, like, really deeply unhappy. I thought it would be a smaller number. But, yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I think the answers that came back about workplaces, you know, we've got good workplaces and bad workplaces. So potentially for every three good workplaces, there's one not so great workplace. And I guess as testers, when we're interviewing for jobs and when we're sort of like thinking about making a move, for me, I know that I would be wanting to do a lot of research about the company that I was like potentially going to want to go and work for. And I think it's important for testers to ask a lot of questions in job interviews. And I think it's a two-way process as well.
Definitely. Actually, that's something that you've just made me realise. I've seen a lot about interviewing for and hiring testers.
Yeah.
I've not seen a huge amount on the questions to ask when you're being interviewed to make sure you don't go to one of these places where they make you sign disclaimers to say there are no bugs in this software, yeah, or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You do still, I mean, I've had this discussion with someone who's on the podcast previously where although you are being interviewed as a job seeker, you still have power in that conversation.
Of course you do.
You need to interview the employer just as much as you're being interviewed. It's not impress the person, it's making sure you're both right for each other.
Yeah, very much so. Very, very much so. I think that's one thing that the survey sort of really opened my mind to, that I guess one in four testing jobs might not be that great. Yeah, you've got to be careful.
Definitely, definitely. So what's next? What's on the horizon for you?
There's sort of one thing that I'm working on at the moment, which is I'm making a Shiny web app. Shiny is a framework for R. And what I'm hoping to do is get all of this data sort of into a web browser with like checkboxes and radio buttons so people can define like a group of software testers through, like, I don't know, picking their education level or how long they've worked in testing or whatever, and then being able to see all of the answers to all of the questions for that group of testers. Wow. So I think that's going to be my next blog post. It's a work in progress at the moment, but I'm thinking that's probably going to be done within the next sort of couple of weeks.
That'll be a really useful resource, actually. So it's just all the survey data that's been put in a web app, and people can
slice
the data as they want and see what comes out.
Yeah, pretty much.
That sounds really good.
And then the other thing that I'm thinking about doing as well is I'm thinking about doing another survey next summer. Mm-hmm. And I think as a community of testers, it's very nice for us to have some open data. Do you know what I mean? Sort of like, mm-hmm. I know we have the, what's it called? The state of testing survey, which I think is done by, I think it's sponsored by Practitest or something like that. But that's not, the raw data isn't really available from that. So we're trusting somebody else's interpretation of the data, and we can't actually go in and see, you know, how many people said yes to this question or no to that question. So I'm thinking I'm going to spend the rest of the year probably designing an even better survey.
Yeah.
And running it next summer. With the view to making it all completely transparent and public and getting the data out there into the community so that people can look at it and use it to try and answer their own questions.
No, that would be awesome. That sounds amazing. And I'm sure even more people will be around this time around because it's always the first one that people don't know about it. And there's always a bit of hesitation, I think, sometimes when it comes to putting data into things. Given that you had the transparency and then you're doing it again next year with the same transparency but with extra leveling up the survey, I assume it'll just get bigger.
And so
that'd be great. That sounds really good.
I think when a survey is sort of closed and, you know, you don't really know what it's being used for, like, I guess like a market researcher stops you in the street and says, what's your household income? And you go, oh, hang on, what do you want to know that for? That's when people get wary. But I think sort of keeping it all open and sort of keeping it for the community as well. You know, one thing I've realized since I did this is that there aren't actually that many people doing actual research into sort of software testing and testers and sort of issues that we face. I don't think it's something that many people have explored before. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's just in my circles. I've never really seen much going on.
I've not seen much going on, which is one of the reasons I want you to come on the show, because I've never seen anything quite like this other than the closed ones for practice. I was like, no, this is incredible. We must talk about this. And yeah, when I put my own form out, which is much more open-ended than yours, and I'm realising now that I'm going to have to do a lot of manual work to get, because it's just stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the things where there's just so many different aspects of testing that we could, like, of the people of testing that there could be some research on, but it isn't being done that much. But then again,
mm-hmm.
We'd want the community to do it, I think. We wouldn't want it to be done by people where we give answers to people and they might do nefarious things with it somehow.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I'm sort of like, one of the ideas I'm toying with at the moment, and one of the things I'm interested in, is I'm interested in sort of all the different industries that we test in. And I'm interested in sort of almost like seeing how testers flow through the different industries, because I know that like 80% of testers have tested in more than one industry.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be quite curious to find out if we've got certain industries which are more open to hiring people without experience as testers, or the sort of like, I guess, like entry level industries.
Yeah.
And then sort of seeing if there's any sort of patterns with end industries where people sort of migrate to. Just sort of seeing if there's anything interesting there.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. My instinct is to say something like the more regulated industries would be the ones that are hardest to get to when you've not got experience, because there are some like one area that fascinates me, and I've got someone that I want to talk to every other podcast, is they test in the medical industry.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously there's so much stuff that you have to do in that industry that we might even turn our nose up at doing outside, like doing things like test cases and test plans and all that kind of stuff, but you might mm-hmm. have to do it in those. I mean, I've done a little bit myself, and you kind of have to have those sort of test plans and test results there.
Yeah, of course.
Doing that as an entry-level person, they might not want you to do that because they've got so much at risk almost.
Yeah.
Whereas doing more web-based or app-based stuff, where there is still a risk, but it's not quite as bad as when you've got to submit stuff to mm-hmm. the MHRA or the government or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and sort of get in that sort of flow. But testing, when we're moving as a whole towards more exploratory testing and not doing as in-depth test plans, as we're moving towards that, but there's still these industries where you might have to do that because of the regulations.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I am a fan of context-driven testing and sort of like exploratory testing. And for a long time in my world, exploratory testing was the only testing that existed because I was basically a black box games tester.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get to see computer code or anything like that. But I do feel that there are two sides to the testing coin, which are your exploratory testing, and you're exploring and you're experimenting, you're devising of theories and then testing those theories to see if they work or not. And the other side, which is the sort of scripted test cases, it should do this, it should do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're saying, I think both are kind of necessary in some circumstances. If you had, for example, a very, very critical thing, which if it was broken, it would be the end of the world,
yeah.
then that would make sense to have a scripted test to check that one really, really important thing every time you released it, just to be, you know, certain, just to have the confidence that it's not going to be the end of the world. But you would also still explore around, you know, and sort of check the other stuff as well. Yeah. I just see the shift of scripted testing is all going to shift onto automation.
Yeah,
I think the days of manual sort of scripted testing are sort of probably going to dwindle. But I still think for like super, super important critical stuff, you probably still want a human to look at the results of the automation.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, for the critical stuff, I think you have to, because
mm-hmm.
even if it's not failed, it might still be weird.
Yeah.
You can't take that risk.
Yeah. Yeah, because we all know software does crazy, unexpected things, even when you think everything's going to be okay, and it like just breaks.
Yeah. And Rosie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Any final words of wisdom to share with us?
I'd just like to say thank you. Thank you for asking me to come on your podcast. It was a bit unexpected, but I'm really glad you asked, and I hope that I've been interesting to talk to, and I inspire you to go and do some more sort of surveys and data analysis. And, you know, data analysis is it's very similar to exploratory testing, because like exploring data is like exploring software. And I think a lot of the skills we already have as testers are good for sort of analysing data as well.
Well, thank you for being on. You are now officially the first tester I've had on this podcast. That's not been
Awesome. Thank you.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. Show notes will contain links to all the stuff we've mentioned, blog posts, and the results of the survey on GitHub, and links to Rosie's Twitter page as well. If you want to contact me, email is letstalkabouttests@gmail.com. Website is letstalkabouttests.xyz, and I'm on Twitter @letstalktests. If you want to leave the show a review on iTunes, that would be pretty helpful. And I will see you guys in a fortnight. Bye. Our planet will be just a point of light.